Welcome back to Trashy Divorces. I'm Stacy.
Hey, everybody. I'm Alicia. Welcome to another episode of Trashy Divorces.
A little different this week, huh?
A little bit different. It's been a little bit of a sad week. Mm-hmm. My beloved grandmother passed away this past week after a very long and well-lived life at the age of 93. Hmm. She is an angel, and I'm a little sad.
You are.
So this week, we are using an older Patreon episode to make sure that everybody gets their share, fair share of trash candy. We're recycling a bit this week with one of my favorite stories.
Mm-hmm. I actually love this, the sort of original staircase murder. There was certainly an owl involved, I'm sure of it.
This is a Trashier Tutors bonus divorce episode. This one, it takes place in 1560, and it is the bizarre love triangle of Elizabeth I, son of a traitor, Robert Dudley, and his wife, Amy Robsart.
His wife and possible murder victim.
Murder victim. Yeah, it's true crime. It's a Tudor mystery. Uh-huh. It's English history. There's a lot of trash candy embedded in this one.
And some mispronunciations that we have
many mispronunciations.
We appreciate all of our listeners who help us learn from this process, too.
Thank you, all listeners. I now know it is Norfolk, not Norfolk. It's Suffolk, not Suffolk. One of the delights of Patreon is Alicia's journey with proper pronunciations of English and French words over time.
It really has been quite the journey.
It's part of the charm. I'm so sorry. The correction was issued long ago on Patreon. Norfolk, Norfolk, Norfolk. That's all I have to say. Let's go ahead and just do a quick rundown of our Patreon magic mirror this week. We had some people join us with tremendous gratitude, thanks, and fanfare. Stacy, kick us off.
Sure. Thank you to Beth, Sandra J., Susan D., Allison P., Ruth,
Olivia O., Missy F., Kara, Cherish B., Jessica W., Penny P.,
Lisa O., and Heather M.
Thanks, y'all, so much for joining us. What did y'all hear this week? Ooh. I had a Trashier Tutors about the Shakespeare authorship controversy.
You made a very compelling case that
Thank you.
The historical personage named William Shakespeare is not the author of the body of work that we consider to be William Shakespeare.
Stratford Willie did not write William Shakespeare's works. You covered everyone's favorite sapphic poet.
Maybe, yeah. Maybe. So side piece, we covered Emily Dickinson and perhaps... Definitely her lifelong, deep, wonderful friendship with her sister-in-law, but possibly when you read all those letters, sure looks like it was something else entirely.
It was so much fun. This week, Patreon, we are doing Shakespeare Part 2, mm-hmm. So I'm going to talk about the candidates that,
right.
Now that we know Stratford Willie
probably
didn't write Shakespeare, who could have written those works. Oh, also, my side piece this week, Coco Chanel. I'm very excited about that.
Very cool.
That's what's happening on Patreon. One more thing before we kick off the show. Y'all, who wants to give the gift of trash candy this Christmas?
So much trash candy. Obviously, we have a live show coming up on December 29th here in Atlanta at Venkman's.
Get your tickets now.
VENKMANS.com.
And the ticket link will be in the show notes.
It will be in the show notes. It is on our website at trashydivorces.com. Also, we have merchandise if you should like to give the gift of a Trashy Divorces t-shirt
or hoodie,
phone case or hoodie or
whatever.
Pillow.
Give a gift pillow. To trash candy.
Sure. Check out our website has links to everything. So feel free to drop on by trashydivorces.com.
And click on the merch link.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Now, are you ready for the original staircase murder?
I'm going to go get my tinfoil owl hat.
Let's do this.
Yep.
Go, go, go.
Hey, patrons.
Hey, y'all. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for the outpouring of love and kindness and sweetness and tenderness that all of y'all have sent since the passing of my sweet, sweet grandma. You don't know how much it means to me. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. We really do have the best.
We really do have the best
group of people in the world.
And as a couple of you have asked, I am trying to take care of Alicia, who is not really great to, like, she doesn't like being taken care of. So it's always, these are always complicated situations.
I'm trying.
Oh, I know. I know.
Been a little easier the last 2 days, I think, for you.
Alicia with the flu is fun too. That's,
I just wanted to, just a quick note, y'all. Thank you so much. We are kind of sorry for having to reuse a Patreon episode for the Sunday live feed. I didn't have a new ep in me this week. So apologies to those who are like, hey, I've already heard this. You'll hear a more edited version today, but we're coming back for you with more hot trash candy next week. Yeah. We'll resume normal programming.
Yeah, no, we have a cool one scheduled.
And Patreon episodes this week are going to be just like normal. So thank you, everybody, again. You don't know how much I have felt all of your heartfelt love and prayers and wishes, and y'all are the very best.
You guys are the very best.
Thank you. Keep it trashy and tender.
Yes.
Thanks, y'all.
That's right. Thanks. Bye.
Bye.
Hey, Alicia. So it's Patreon bonus divorce story time. And this is Alicia Playtime.
This is Alicia. This is totally Alicia Playtime. Okay. Today is one of my favorite mysteries. Can't quite call it a murder. Can't quite call it a divorce. But it is definitely true crime and divorce adjacent. It is a Tudor cupcake loaded with trashy royal sprinkles.
It really does sound right up your alley.
Oh, my God. Okay, so for your trashy divorces bingo card at home, if you're keeping check, this one has royalty, executions on the Tower Green, competing families and court factions, multiple generations of being a traitor to the crown, secret affairs, religious strife, and assassination plots.
Okay.
I could go on, but my point is the story has fucking everything. Okay, you ready?
If that completes your bingo card, email it. No, I'm kidding.
Bingo.
Yeah.
Today, our featured couple is Lady Amy Robsart.
Okay.
And Robert Dudley.
Okay.
Starting at the end of our story, because we open at the close, our sweet Lady Amy is found at the bottom of a staircase in Cumnor Place.
What?
September 8th, 1560, dead of a broken neck.
1560. So, okay. This, all right. Old school.
1560.
Going back.
1560.
Staircase murder.
Staircase murder. At the age of 28.
Dead of a broken neck. Do they have owls in England?
I don't think I have owls in this story, but we'll see.
I'll keep them. I'll put them in.
So how did Amy... How did Lady Amy die?
Pretty sure it was the owl.
Was she ill? Was it an accident? Was it suicide? Was it murder? Today, through the telling of this trashy Tudor... almost divorce.
Right.
I shall, one, lay out the psychological and astrological profile of this couple.
Yes.
Like I do.
Like you do.
Number two, provide the facts surrounding her mysterious death. And lastly, third, provide you with my white hot rage about this case and my supposition about what I think really happened and who was responsible. You ready?
I am because... you have certainly talked about these two people a whole lot since I've known you. So let's hear the whole thing once and for all. Let's get it all out there.
So I can just turn this on when I want you to hear it again.
The
original.
Yep. If you're going to, the original staircase murder.
Let's do it. Okay. Let's do it. The year is 1532 when our fair lovers, at least the first set of them, are born. Henry VIII is on the throne in 1532. Preparing for his trip to meet the King of France in Calais and present Anne Boleyn to him as his future queen. Keep in mind, KOA, Catherine of Aragon, still languishing in Coldfoot Wet Castle Land. He's already married, but it doesn't matter. This is 1532. In this year, a girl and a boy are born. Our girl is Amy Robsart, daughter of a wealthy landowner, but not really very high in social station.
Okay.
They have some land. He does some stuff, but she's not titled. There is no distinction of...
these people are not the...
raised lineage.
Marquess of Cholmondeley. Correct. Or anything like that. Okay.
She's born in Norfolk, June the 7th. She is a Gemini. Our boy Robert, born just a few weeks later, June 24th. He is a Cancer. He is fifth in what will be a family of 13 children. Okay. Also, he's a Dudley. And that means that he is in the family of one of the most powerful Protestant factions at court. His family is part of this Protestant rebellion. Robert's dad, John Dudley, and because they're going to be
this is a fancy family, unlike hers. Hers is...
Correct.
They hers are is titled. Okay, but his is a big deal. Okay. Well,
they're a big deal. Cycling around, you're going to find out why. Okay. So Robert's dad is John Dudley, but because there's a lot of fucking names in this, we're just going to call him Daddy Dudley from now on.
Sure.
Okay. So Daddy Dudley in 1533 is a definite ally to Anne, to Protestantism, to all the nutty shit that Henry VIII is doing. And it's not yet really the time for him to interfere in court stuff. He is mostly on a campaign outside of the country, Daddy Dudley, during Anne's downfall. But here, and he's kind of staying undercover now, because the thing you have to know about Daddy Dudley is he is working to retain grace and favor after the execution of his father as a traitor in the first year of the reign of Henry VIII. So the only thing Granddad Dudley really did wrong was amass a crap ton of wealth and power.
Okay. Which is frequently how you run afoul of.
And Henry wasn't down for that plan at all. Mm-hmm. Granddad Dudley was a threat. He needed to be eliminated, executed on the Tower Green, August of 1510.
Yikes. Just yikes. Oh, well, you know, we're bringing this kind of leadership back.
Yeah, we got a body count
so,
in this one. Yeah, okay. Yeah. So Daddy Dudley has legitimately spent plus 20 going on years to regain his family's status, their lands, their titles. And he's not ruffling any feathers yet, but he's going to. Okay, so by all accounts, Amy and Robert had childhoods that were happy enough. Amy's spending her time in Norfolk with her parents doing the Norfolk thing. And Robert...
Surviving the measles.
Sure. Praying for the land of vaccinations.
Avoiding the plague. Yeah.
Okay. So Robert, though, just like you said, the Dudleys are super connected in at court. So he's in London with his family. He's a playmate of Lady Elizabeth, who used to be a princess, but she's a lady now. She was born in 1532 as well, September of 1532. So little Elizabeth is 2.5 when Annie B is murdered. Yeah, I said it. I'll say it again. Anne Boleyn got screwed, and Elizabeth is a super smart kid and realizes that even that day something has changed. Why did you call me princess yesterday?
Right.
And today now I'm a lady. Well, Henry has bastardized her with the divorce from Anne Boleyn before he kills her. So Robert kind of grows up in Elizabeth's court. They're exactly the same age. They share the same tutors. They go to the same classrooms. They're playmates. And Robert, at the age of 8, Elizabeth, Robert, both at the age of 8, Elizabeth tells him that she will never marry.
Hmm.
Okay, so look at the example she has. Her mom's been beheaded.
Right.
Her next stepmother dies in childbirth. Her next stepmother is divorced and is like totally her favorite aunt. And then Catherine Howard, her mother's cousin, so part of her family and faction, executed. So really, there's not a lot. About being a girl, being a woman,
right?
That Elizabeth is looking forward to.
Yeah, also, I think we really need to consider whether there's some sort of Trashy Divorces Parent of the Year award we could give to Henry VIII. Because,
oh my God.
Like, when you want to model healthy relationships for your kids, I think he really took it above and beyond.
So Elizabeth, by the age of 8, like, we haven't even talked about her teenage years yet. That's another Trashy Tutors. But at age 8, she's like, psh. I will never marry. It is not for me. So court stuff, and Robert's growing up fine, and Henry VIII does finally keel over in the late 1540s, and Edward VI, Jane Seymour's son, assumes the throne. But he's a littles. He is definitely super serious. He's a scholarly kid. He's super Protestant, and he is going to make a great ruler one day, but he's a little kid.
Right.
So everyone at court is now vying for their way in. Now that the power dynamic has changed, where do they fit in with Edward? And because he's 12, Edward doesn't have a consort. There are no ladies in waiting. Like, ladies are now gone from the court. There's no female counterbalance in court factions really making a big play. Just a lot of testosterone wanting power, which Daddy Dudley pretty successfully does, and really becomes de facto ruler of England from 1550 to 1553. He's the power behind the throne. In 1550, life is great, and the Dudleys are a little bit more redeemed, right? He's had 20 more years. He's the power by the hand of the king.
Yeah.
It's great. And the stink of Granddad Dudley's traitor has almost worn off.
Yeah.
Fading, and like time passes.
As it does.
And now Daddy Dudley with 13 kids, it's like it's time to broker some kids' marriages. But first, in this brokering of how to ally with more power and gain more power, Robert fucks it all up. Oh, the fifth kid, those middle kids. Robert has fallen in love with non-titled, not important, lovely little fair Amy Robsart. Loves her. And she loves him. And they date court for about a year and appear to really make a love match. Like, her dad does own some land, but she's definitely socially inferior.
Right.
And if it's not a love match, it's, hey, we're 18 and we really want to make a fuck match. So both families are Protestant, and Dudleys are an ascendant at court. And Daddy Dudley's like, all right, you know, if it makes you happy, go for it.
That's cool.
Yeah. And by all accounts, everyone's thrilled. 3 days before her 18th birthday, Robert and Amy marry at the Royal Palace of Sheen. Edward VI is in attendance. It is a big deal. Young love, same age. By all accounts, it's going to be bliss. The wedding contract that was signed in May of 1550 specified that Amy would inherit her father's estate only after both of her parents die.
So her mother would be cared for if her mother survived.
Correct. Her mom, because England's got a bunch of fucked up rules about what women can and can't do depending on their classification.
Right.
But the will states that both of her parents have to die for Amy to inherit anything. But she's going to inherit something. Like, Robert has a title. She has land. It's cool. William Cecil, who you're going to hear a lot more about in a minute, comments that it is a carnal marriage. So even he knows, like, it's not a connection marriage. It is a carnal marriage. And everything's groovy, at least in the beginning. So let's talk about a Gemini Cancer mix. Air and water in your bogus astrology.
My very dead-on astrology.
It's fog. So, like, this isn't the worst match in history between signs, but it's not the best. Gemini has a very intellectual nature, where Cancer replaces that with a very feeling one. This is head versus heart all the time. The combo can be delightful when they play with each other. They can bring out the best qualities in each other. Their common ground is the world of imagination, enchantment, wonder, and curiosity, and learning about this infinitely changeable world. The glue that's going to keep a Gemini Cancer together is the experience of life itself. Both putting the focus on that, just the adventure of life, joy de vivre.
Right.
This is where head and heart can meet with a Cancer and a Gemini. It's all fine and good until they stop spending time together. Hmm. They have to be together for it to work.
Right.
And our couple is going to stop spending time together and it all goes wrong. So let's talk about it. So remember Daddy Dudley, de facto ruler of England, puppet master, along with Edward's Seymour uncles, Jane Seymour's brothers. Everybody's trying to puppet master the boy king. Lots of powerful people, lots of feelings. And maybe in response to some of the Seymour brothers' power grabs, Because it's happening. One of the Seymour brothers is trying to marry Elizabeth after he's already married Catherine Parr, Henry's sixth queen. Like, they're making some distinct power grabs. In response to this, Daddy Dudley is like, okay, I can make a power grab too. Watch this, motherfuckers. So in 1553, he attempts to make an unsuccessful marriage alliance between his son, Guilford. I hate this kid. He's such a fucking asshole. This is the Blaine in Pretty in Pink.
Okay.
He's that yeah. character. Or is that James Spader in Pretty in Pink?
Yeah, pretty sure.
Like, he's that guy.
Yeah.
He's Dudley Dursley. He's like everybody, like
entitled and
a jerk, and it's all my world, and we hate this kid. But Daddy Dudley tries to make a marriage alliance with him to Margaret Clifford, who is like seventh in the line of succession. There are a lot of girls in the line of succession at this point because Henry Tudor and most of the Tudor line has made a habit of killing off any male
right.
that could claim succession.
Cool.
So Margaret Clifford's like seventh in line. And that plan didn't work because Margaret's father's like, fuck no, not in my lifetime. You're Dudleys. No, you're traitors to the king. But there's another royal cousin, Lady Jane Grey, who's a little higher in the line of succession. And that match is approved with Edward VI's permission, because you have to get the king's permission.
Of course, of course.
And Guilford marries Jane. He's definitely making a power play. The next power play that he makes is coercing Edward, charmingly, to change the order of succession so that if Edward dies, the line of succession now goes to Lady Jane Grey.
Who is now his daughter-in-law.
Who is a Protestant cousin of Edward. Instead of Mary, Henry VIII's first daughter, and as extreme of a Catholic as they are Protestant.
Right.
Okay. In May of 1553, Edward dies. He's a kid. The king dies. He's done.
The child king
the
dies.
The child king dies in 1553.
Measles, polio, flu, something vaccine preventable.
Nobody, probably. Yeah. But no, cool. It's...
They also had some weird...
Diseases?
Yeah, like...
Look, honey, I brought diseases.
The sweating sickness or whatever that would kill you in a day, and yeah. It's...
No, he definitely was ill for months leading up, which okay. is part of how Daddy Dudley is like, hey, buddy, hey, let's go ahead and talk about the terms
Very
of your will.
Very important
not,
we do this.
You're not
yeah.
looking too good today. So, Edward dies in 1553. So, he is 16, almost 17. He was born in 1537.
Jesus.
So teenage
okay.
king dead. If you ever wonder why Lady Jane Grey is called the 9 days queen, Dudley, his family and faction, set Jane Grey up as queen when Edward dies. They do not tell Mary. Mary has people at court, so she knows. So she is right now collecting a fucking army.
She goes on to be Bloody Mary. Is that right?
That is correct. Okay. So she right now is allying her Catholic forces, starting an army so she can come take over.
Right.
Like, Game of Thrones is sure. not at all fictional.
Well, okay. And you've got this... when you did the Henry VIII story, there was a period of time called the Year of Three Queens. Is that correct?
1536.
It's like this is repeated because now you've got Jane Grey, Mary, and Elizabeth who will end up vying. Is that correct?
Yeah, Elizabeth comes 5 years later. So
okay,
hold on, you're
okay. So
jumping the gun. But yes, three rulers in 1553.
Well, three women rulers.
No, Edward, Lady Jane Grey, Mary is your 1553.
Okay, fine.
Okay, year three rulers. You're so close. So Mary does raise that army, comes and takes over London, and Daddy Dudley, Brother Guilford, and Lady Jane Grey, and Robert Dudley, who have been wrapped up in all of this, are locked up in the Tower of fucking London, imprisoned and sentenced to death.
Hmm.
All of them. Guess what? Dudleys are traitors again.
Oh, well.
Right? So yeah. Now we have...
Three generations.
Three generations of traitors to the crown. You get the... It's all building. Right. It's all building. You right. need all of this to get how great the story is. Okay. Dudleys are dirt. In the name of England and all the good done in the last generation is
wasted.
Gone.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And this time isn't going to pass as quickly. People are going to remember, mm-hmm. hey, you plotted to take, that was a coup, yo, you treasonous. Okay. So young Robert is caught up in all this and is at the Tower from July of 1553 to October of 1554, a year and 4 months. And that's a long ass time.
That's a long ass time.
So Amy is allowed a visit to Terry with him on occasion. There's also at this time, because the Dudleys aren't the only one in court factions, there's also another famous prisoner at the Tower of London at this time, Princess Elizabeth. Sorry, Lady Elizabeth. Elizabeth, Mary's baby sister, daughter of Anne Boleyn, has been locked up by Mary as well in the fucking tower for a whole other conspiracy. But needless to say, she is in the pokey. She's been accused with treason as well. And Elizabeth is praying that she doesn't get beheaded with the rest of them. I digress. So Dad, Guilford, Jane... all axed. Robert gets a reprieve. Amy's family, her influence, her love for him, she makes all sorts of appeals. And with family connections, Robert actually gets the fuck out of this okay. and manages not to be beheaded. So
cool.
Great. And when Robert gets out, Amy's family really supports them. Amy's dad passes away in 1554. Amy's mom passes away in 1557. So very sad. But hey, now we've got land. We've inherited a lot of land wealth. So Robert, things aren't looking too bad, right? His family's a traitor again.
Right.
And that's cool. And it's the reign of Mary I, and he's still Protestant, but he and Amy are gonna be okay. They're looking forward to building a future together.
Right.
We're going to win this, baby. We're going to do this.
We're going to survive this, baby.
Right? They're looking to live their own version of Spanish pipe dream. Going in the country, build them a home, plant a garden, eat some peaches. Everything's going to be great.
Well,
playing house hunters.
By now, they've survived all the childhood diseases.
Fuck, it's done, right? Like,
would have wiped them out, so.
We've made it through the worst of what can ever happen.
They're immune to diphtheria. Probably. Sibling fights are unavoidable, but what if every fight you had was under a microscope on a global scale? That's the reality for brothers Prince William and Prince Harry. They were each other's closest friends and allies since the death of their mother, but that all began to crack as they married and took wildly different approaches to their royal duties.
Wondery's podcast, Dis and Tell, is hosted by comedians Sydney Battle and Matt Bellassai. Each episode unpacks one of pop culture's most iconic celebrity feuds, and they recently took a deeper look into the real reason William versus Harry started.
It's actually much bigger than these two brothers, stretching back into the history of the British monarchy. Did their feud start with the royal family's mistreatment of Meghan Markle, or was it something that started much earlier?
Follow Dis and Tell on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, Trash Pandas, Stacy here to share my latest take a mental breather from your day find, Two Dots. Two Dots is a free-to-download puzzle-based mobile game where you connect dots in relaxing puzzles while unlocking levels and collecting treasure and prizes along the way. Connect at least two adjacent dots of the same color to make a move, and remember, dots can connect horizontally and vertically, but never, ever diagonally. And as engaging as the main puzzles are, there are also side quest game modes like the scavenger hunt, where you find hidden objects amidst riotously colorful art, and classic adventure game vibes in the arcade. Each fun and relaxing Two Dots puzzle offers a new gameplay experience, plus the chance to collect trophies, medals, and other souvenirs of your adventures. As you advance through the levels, you'll earn various power-ups and special dots with new effects, like erasing all dots of a certain color or clearing a row and column simultaneously, and the colorful visuals find the perfect balance between stimulating and soothing.
Two Dots is free to download, and you can play even when you're offline. Make it a party by challenging your friends on Facebook. If you're ready to kick back and unwind, download Two Dots for free on Android and iOS and start connecting.
Ladies and gentlemen.
What are you doing?
What do you mean?
Keep it simple.
I'm making the promo.
Just keep it simple. Just say, hey, we're the Brav Bros, two guys that talk about Bravo.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, we're the Brav Bros.
No.
Oh.
Dude, stop with the voice. Keep it simple.
I've seen promos on TV, dude. This is how you get the fans engaged. This is how you get listeners. We're trying to get listeners here. If we just say, oh, we're two dudes that talk about Bravo, people are going to get tired of it already. We need some oomph.
All right, then fine. Let's try to do it with your voice.
Brav Bros.
Good job.
Lauren, we are sisters.
That's true.
And we host a celebrity-obsessed podcast called Pop Apologists.
We also love Taylor Swift. Chandler, how are you managing to cope while we await Taylor's new album?
Look, I want to be put into a medically induced coma and wake up on April 19th, but I'm not sure my insurance is going to cover it.
Join us on our pop culture podcast, Pop Apologists, where we will be dishing on all things celebrity news and deep diving every word and note of Taylor's new album.
Pop Apologists.
Pop Apologists.
But it's England. And you know in England, as soon as shit gets stable, you know it's about to go down again.
Just go into soap making and save the world, would you?
So what goes down? In November of 1558, Mary the First, yay, blessedly fucking dies. Okay. Elizabeth gets the news at Hatfield. This is the Lord's doing and is glorious in our eyes.
And is she next up?
Elizabeth says she's queen.
Bat her up? Okay.
Bat her up.
Somehow I thought there had been a war of secession that she was involved in. Is it Mary Queen of Scots? Doesn't she have to fight somebody?
Yeah. She's going to fight Mary Guise and not necessarily Mary Queen of Scots, but we're getting there. See, it's like you're in AP history all over again. Okay. So November 1558, Elizabeth assumes the throne. This is glorious in our eyes. Elizabeth may be living large, but she has inherited a crap ton of problems. Shit's shitty. England is in the middle of a religious war with Mary's 100% Catholic reign. Lots and lots of burnings at the stake. So Mary executed over 300, 301 maybe, 300 people during her reign. Only 5 years.
I was going to say it was a short reign.
By contrast, Henry VIII executed 81 people, and he reigned for 40 years, and he's supposed to be the tyrant.
Right.
Okay. Before Mary, right, it was Edward. So we've had a shift from Henry, religious scholar, making up his own religion, to super Protestant with Edward, super Catholic with Mary.
Right, who probably felt like she had quite a bit of cleaning up to do among the citizenry to reimpose the old-time religion.
Fucking lunatic. Okay.
What we love are theocrats on this show in particular.
So that's a big problem. The struggle for how the country is going to manage religion under Elizabeth. Also, England is bankrupt. Oh. Bankrupt as fuck. And looking like 2 a.m. last call at the European country bar with France and Spain eyeing England and shutting the joint down.
Right.
2 a.m. last call. Elizabeth not only assumes the throne, but 99 problems. And oh, her entire Star Chamber, Privy Chamber cabinet really want her to get married. And they are pushing every gross European bachelor, young, old, gay, doesn't matter, all the choices her way. So
to make an alliance it's a weak country, so they need.
So take it back. She's got 100 problems.
Right.
But Elizabeth is going to do the damn thing. She's been waiting her whole life to actually stay alive long enough to be queen. She is determined to win the Game of Thrones. Yeah. And she does.
She does.
Annie B's faction, right, has kept Elizabeth alive, safe, protected for her to make it to this point. And her whole faction's like, hell yeah, we're doing this. Okay. Elizabeth is a lot like her mom. She is so smart. It is fucking scary. She's lovely. She speaks 6 languages. She is scholarly AF. Roger Ascham, who's like the premier scholar in England at that time, is like, I can't teach her. Like, she's brilliant. Like, she is just, she is legitimately phenomenal, phenomenal woman. Okay. So, her favorite pastime is to take foreign texts, translate them. So, a text in another language.
Yes.
Translate it to another language, not English, and then take that text and translate it into a different language. That's what she does, like a fucking crossword. That's her pastime for relaxing. Let me take some archaic Greek and translate it.
Sure.
Into Italian. What the fuck, man?
Well, I mean, there was no internet. There was no electricity. Again, the measles thing was bad, so smallpox.
She is wicked smart. And remember from the age of 8, what has she said? I will never marry. Never. She's seen women lose all their power and often their lives because of marriage and babies. And she ends up saying to her privy counselor, like, I am married to England.
Right.
I am married to this country. I'm married to these people. I do.
Married husband, to the job.
Husband isn't going to do it for me.
Yeah.
But to rule successfully, she is going to need some right-hand men around. And especially in changing out Mary's Catholic court. She's going to need her people in play. So she makes two essential posts. Number one, William Cecil is appointed Secretary of State. This time he is 38. He is brilliant. He is modest, so modest that instead of riding a horse, he rides a donkey. He is a cousin of Blanche Perry, Elizabeth's longest serving and most loyal companion and confidant.
Okay.
So Blanche Perry grew up as like an adult taking care of Elizabeth. She's cousins with William Cecil. So right. There's a family alliance. And by this point, he has played on both sides of the government through Edward's reign and Mary's. He's Protestant AF, but he's been managing to play both sides and stay alive. But now that Elizabeth's in charge, he is 100% team Elizabeth. Protestant AF, loyal to Elizabeth to a degree that is extraordinary.
Okay.
Okay, that's post number one. Post number two. Every lusty queen needs a what?
Pony boy.
You said it.
Thought you were going to say Chancellor of the Exchequer because that's an important post.
You got to have a pony boy, Stacey. Got to have your pony boy. And welcome Robert Dudley.
Pony
master
boy.
Master of the horse. Taking care of Elizabeth's safety, her desires, and her pleasures. Like, he's master of the horse. So anything that horses have to do with, pageants, parades, hunting, riding, he is in charge of fucking fun. Okay. Remember, the two have been constant friends since childhood. They were both in the Tower. Like, they're kind of BFFs.
Yeah.
It's a good gig, but the whole court is kind of pissed about it. He is the queen's favorite. Everyone's angry, and hey, he's the, I have to do it, son of a traitor.
Right.
Right? Elizabeth feels like he's been persecuted wrongly, just like she has. So it doesn't matter that he's the son of a traitor.
I mean, it wouldn't.
She wants him at her side.
I can understand her perspective, though. Like, her father beheaded his grandfather, right?
Yeah.
So, her father also beheaded her mother. So, I mean.
Oh, and her then, sister beheaded his father.
Right.
And his
then,
brother.
Yes.
And
then
his sister-in-law. And almost him.
Yes. Her extremely tyrannical sister from the wrong religion.
Lady Jane Grey's her cousin, too.
Yeah.
And Lady Jane Grey grew up with Elizabeth in the same household. She was in the same classrooms with Robert Dudley.
Right.
Like, it's all just shitty. Now she has her dark, handsome gypsy, Robert Dudley, at her side, pony boy.
But his Gemini wife is back at the estate. Is that right?
Yeah, so we're going to talk about that.
Okay.
So it turns out Elizabeth and Robert Dudley are spending a lot of time together. His apartments at court are really close, if not adjoining, with hers. By the end of April 1559, tongues are wagging. Elizabeth never lets Robert leave her side. He's not allowed to go anywhere, which causes a little bit of a problem for dear Lady Amy. Elizabeth also does not like other women at court. wives are not welcomed. Besides the fact that it costs a fortune, other ladies get in the way of all the attention being paid to... She's Virgo.
I see.
Okay. All the attention being paid to her.
That's fascinating. I don't think I've ever heard that portrayal of her. She's usually... like, older in life, she was pretty level.
Oh, I mean, she takes over the throne 1558. She's hot. She's 25. Yeah. She's Anne Boleyn's daughter.
Yeah.
She's smart as fuck. She's sexy as
fuck.
No,
I get it.
She...
I get it.
Wants it all. Mm-hmm. Okay. Robert sets him up at Kew Palace, which stood in the Kew Gardens, which is super close to Richmond, Elizabeth's palace in London, where she's staying a lot these days. Amy doesn't ever get to Kew Palace. Like, mention of her is not allowed at court. It is unpleasing to Elizabeth. Like, Elizabeth gets angry if Amy is mentioned. Elizabeth will call on him unannounced all the time. Amy cannot be there.
Wow.
Robert does.
That is not cool.
No, Robert does go visit Amy in Easter 1559. And Amy comes to London in May of that same year. Spends about a month and is, I don't know if like maybe the queen found out that she was there. But right. She is unceremoniously sent home packing.
Shipped back, yeah.
In June of that year, the Spanish ambassador, different, this is not Chapuis.
Right.
This is a new one, but he's just as much of a fucker. And if you learn never to trust a Spanish ambassador, he writes back to Spain that her health has improved, but she's being very careful with her food, Lady Amy. We don't know what that means.
Wow.
Well, okay. It's a mystery.
Wow. So much court gossip.
Okay. So after this month-long visit, ends in June of 1559, Robert and Amy will never see each other again. She has 14 months to live. Dun,
dun. They don't see each other for more than a year? Damn.
So by December 1559, Amy has moved into Cumnor Place. It's near Abingdon in Berkshire. The house, which is an altered 14th century monastic complex, is rented by a friend of Robert Dudley's. And this friend and his wife live there, as well as some other relations. It is a big place. There are lots of people around all the time. Amy is given rooms in the best rooms in the house, this upper story apartment with a separate entrance and a staircase leading to it. Not the staircase she's going to be found on, though.
Just near the owlry.
Her rooms are also, because it's a four-walled, so there's four walls and a courtyard inside, but all the rooms are kind of built. So everything in those four walls is connected to everything else.
Okay.
Amy also has an internal staircase that gets her into the rest of the home. Through this period, Cumnor Place is the last place she'll live, but Amy's been moving around a lot. And here's the thing, like Robert is always sending gifts to her as she's traveling around and staying with friends. Silks, threads, venison, spices. Like, she is never in want of material things. Her needs are provided for.
She's just never allowed to see her husband.
Her material needs are provided for. Her emotional needs.
Right.
Nowhere close. So, never had any kids. No evidence that she actually was ever pregnant. As a wife of a...
Pony boy.
She is, as a wife of this time, she is looking after the business of his lands and farms. So this is December 1559. In the next 8 months, she's going to hear a lot about Elizabeth and her husband. We don't know how that affected her, but it can't have not gotten to her.
Right.
With as connected as everything is. So let me tell you a little bit about Cumnor Place. It's a small medieval house, gray stone. Part of it was a religious foundation. It was a summer retreat for abbots. Occasionally, it served as a sanatorium for monks. It is a rambling, quadrangular building around a courtyard. There is an upper floor. The home is in a very good state of repair. It is very well taken care of. There are a lot of crumbling crap places that are sitting around England. This isn't one of them. This is a functioning, well-functioning home. Amy is there with a couple of servants and her personal maid, Mrs. Pergo. Amy also has a companion. the widowed sister of William Hyde. Her name is Mrs. Oddingsells. Mrs. Oddingsells was Amy's former host at Dentworth, some other place that she stayed in her travel around. What I'm trying to tell you is this place has all kinds of people fucking living in it, like four or five separate families. There are lots of apartments, lots of rooms that are all separated, but all connected as well. Okay.
Okay.
Scene set there. At the end of 1559, Elizabeth is staying next door to Ponyboy, but still, like, making pretense of courting international suitors. She's playing the game, dangling hopes of success, but never actually compromising her freedom. William Cecil is like, will you just pick one for Christ's sakes? If not this dude, how about these other dudes? There's actually like a 30-plus page list listing all the options that Cecil has found for her.
So every nobleman in Europe, basically?
Every nobleman in Europe. Everyone is on that list except for Ponyboy.
Well,
right? He's married.
There's no alliance to be had. Ponyboy is not... That would not be a political union. I mean...
But Cecil is flinging every option he can her way because in no way at all is fucking Robert Dudley fit to be king. He is a threat. I see what's going on here. I see the two of you. Not cool. He's the son of a traitor. And Elizabeth, please turn your attention anywhere but him. You are ruining your reputation. Why? What is wrong with you? And it's not just him. Like, this is the entire court is... Tongues are wagging. Okay. By the beginning of 1560, this is a national scandal. In March of 1560, the Spanish ambassador writes back to Spain that Robert has told him that if Robert lived another year, he would be in a very different position. The Spanish ambassador has also written that Robert is thinking of divorcing his wife. So the Spanish ambassador last year was, maybe she's sick, she's careful with her food, like, there's all kinds of speculation. Rumors are spreading that he is poisoning his wife and Elizabeth poisoning his wife. Maybe she's ill. Maybe she has breast cancer. Maybe he's really trying to get an annulment on the lack of no kids. Like, every rumor around is spreading. And Elizabeth is still playing, like, hold the suitors at bay long enough for Amy to come to whatever conclusion Amy's going to come to. Nobility and the court is holding it against Robert that she's not marrying, and there end up in the spring of this year being all kinds of fucking assassination plots. All unsuccessful, but he, like, every day, he is, okay, who's going to try to kill me today?
Against Ponyboy.
Yeah, okay. Against Ponyboy. Well, court's pissed.
Yeah.
Court's freaking out. They're ready to stage a coup. But again, all on some level, they're kind of reassuring themselves. Like, Robert's married. He has a pretty wife. They're, you know, but there are rumors. Amy's sick. Robert's waiting for her to die. Rumors and poison.
Robert's not allowed to see her. He's not allowed to leave.
Anyway. Right?
All right.
So, rumor, poison, illness, maybe an annulment. All the rumors are being spread. And Cecil is like, Elizabeth, your reputation is in danger. Could you just please pick any dude from anywhere and stop this scandal? Elizabeth, not interested. And she begins in earnest to start shelving her international suitors that are there or that she's playing the game with away. Winter and spring of 1560. Elizabeth also makes the decision to send away William Cecil. Cecil sent to work out a compromise with Mary of Guise that recognizes Elizabeth as England's legitimate queen. Cecil pretty much averts a war with Scotland, gets Elizabeth exactly what she sent him to do, but he's gone for a few months. And he thinks, woo, you're really going to be happy about the... Yeah, 100%. But he's getting icy letters from her in the meantime. Like, you could have done more. Why didn't you get Calais back? Where are my reparations? And he's like, I went on this mission that you didn't think would ever be successful, and I've made it a success, and you're admonishing me? Like... Fuck. Okay. But having achieved this coup, Elizabeth, recognized queen, everything's going great. She spends the summer of 1560 in Pleasureland with a capital P, abandons all of her actual duties, just hangs out with Ponyboy all day. It's a great summer for her. But the court is coming apart at the seams over it. They hide themselves away for days. Like, just leave the tray at the door. Thanks. Rumors of divorce and worse. And by July, old Cecil gets back to England and is like, what the fuck? Elizabeth is being super chilly to him and has allowed Robert permission to cozy up to Cecil's main rival at court. You don't do that without Elizabeth's permission, and Elizabeth has given that. Okay. Cecil also senses that the relationship between Elizabeth and Robert has undergone a fundamental change. Something changed while I was gone. Elizabeth has no gratitude to him, and now she tells him, hey, you're going to have to go ahead and fund that whole peacekeeping England-saving thing mission that I sent you on, because I'm not going to reimburse you for your expenses for that.
That's a bad boss right there.
When Cecil needs to talk to her and goes to her rooms, her ladies in waiting are like, sorry, Cecil, she's out riding with Ponyboy. She is unavailable, locked in with Ponyboy. Oh, here's what's fun. One night, the torchbearer, so the guy who holds the torch on your boat going up and down the Thames, comes back to the Privy Council, Cecil and all of her advisors, with a report that he was torchbearing as Elizabeth was coming back from a late night visit to Kew Palace, where Robert lives, and is like, ah, isn't he dreamy? He's a man above all others, and I will raise him. Now, what does that mean? Is she going to give him further honors? Is she going to restore his duke title? Is it marriage? But whatever's on is on. This is of grave concern. How far is this thing gone? Elizabeth, again, you are ruining your reputation. Cecil's super depressed. He's ready to resign. He sees that this is the end of his thing. The writing's on the wall. Like, this is how collapsed he is. Let me and my donkey make some plans just to get out of here. He knows his career is over. So much, in fact, that he writes his best buddy Throckmorton, who is in France and Paris as an ambassador for England, hey, buddy, come on back home. I'm not going to be around for that long. You need to get back here to help because I'm not going to have a job. Okay. Court scandal boiling hot. This is the end of August. The court moves over to Windsor Palace. So now Cecil's pissed, and he's telling everyone from here to the back of the room at court that he is quitting. He is done. He says it is a bad sailor that does not see a storm coming and find safe harbor. He is so unhappy at the unsuitability of Robert Dudley and the affair thing that's happening that he's just going to get on his donkey.
Sure.
Ride into the sunset.
Okay.
Okay. So on September 7th, it's a super big party at court, as the next day is Elizabeth's 28th birthday. Party time. Ponyboy, let's have a birthday weekend. Also, on September the 7th, Elizabeth tells the Spanish ambassador that Lady Amy has died. Lady Amy hasn't died.
Oh.
But Elizabeth tells the Spanish ambassador that Lady Amy has died. And you need to keep it on the DL, dude. And it's a big secret, but she's dead. And have you ever learned not to tell the Spanish ambassador anything? But something does happen. In fact, the next day, Elizabeth's 28th birthday, September 8th, Lady Amy does die. Original staircase murder. Amy Dudley is found lying at the bottom of the staircase inside Cumnor Place under very unusual circumstances.
Owl feathers everywhere.
Close. That
would be unusual.
Close. No. So, circumstances are odd as fuck. Amy wakes early that morning and commands her entire staff to leave. Like, her staff was angry about it. But she's like, I need you all to get the fuck out of the house today. I need you all to go. There's a fair that's happening in town. Wouldn't everybody like a day off? The staff does not want to leave her. At the inquest, one of her servants says, I judged her to be a woman of very strange mind. Her staff was pissed. But Amy orders everyone to go away. She needs to be alone. So there are some options here. Suicide. Maybe she knows she does have breast cancer, an illness of the breast, and is about to die anyway. And she's like, nah, let me just go ahead and off myself. Let me do it. Is it an accident? Did she just take a misstep on some stairs and end up with a fall and a broken neck because of a bad tumble? Was she poisoned? It's always a possibility in Tudor England. Or was it murder? Could Robert have done this? Who else would have had a motive to murder his wife? So, throughout the details of how this breaks out and shakes down in the next year, we're going to look at all these scenarios for likelihood and possibility as we talk about what happens.
Okay.
So Robert is with Elizabeth at Windsor and hears of Amy's death and is instantly freaking out about his reputation. And he writes to his steward, Thomas Blount, who's on his way to Cumnor already, like, dude, open an inquest. Elizabeth immediately banishes Robert from court.
Oh, interesting.
For all deaths in Tudor England, there's always a recorded record. The end of the day, her death is going to be found to be accidental, but it was misfiled for years. It took a year for the inquest to get completed. So it was filed in 1561, not 1560. Her inquest records just turned up 5 years ago.
Can I ask why she banished Ponyboy from court?
Because his wife is dead.
But was it like he needs to go and attend to his family situation since his wife has passed? Or was it more sinister, like,
your wife is dead and no one knows why. Okay. You need to get out of my presence.
Okay.
Okay. So Robert calls it his case, and it is eventually found to be an accident, and he's happy about that part, but maybe it should be looked into more, because when this record turned up, in the last decade, it actually makes a coroner's report, and it's this Tudor word called dents, not D-E-N-T-S, but D-I-G-N, bunches of G's and T's, dents. So in the coroner's report, there is a dent in her head that is the width of a quarter of a thumb. And there is also another dent that is the depth of two thumbs. She has open fucking wounds in her head at the bottom of the staircase. She has broken her neck. The jurors are going to say that this is misfortune and nothing more. Her headdress, though, still in that same coroner's report, is noted as undisturbed. Lady Amy is buried at St. Mary's with a lot of pomp and circumstance. The funeral cost to Dudley is about £2,000. In 2017 dollars, this is the sum of, are you ready? £466,000.
How is that even possible?
£500,000 fucking pounds on her. He is giving her he is trying to save his reputation. Yeah, it's an accident, but it's suspicious AF. Right. So let me spend $500,000 on her funeral. Robert does not attend the funeral. It's custom for that point for spouses not to attend.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Robert goes back to Kew Palace and mourns for about 6 months, but really he's been banished from court. Cecil is telling the Spanish ambassador that Elizabeth and Robert Dudley were certainly in the process of doing her away with poison. She wasn't sick at all. Nicholas Throckmorton, who still is in Paris as the English ambassador, allies with Cecil, and he's doing his level best to make sure that the gossip is spread around the French court too. Cecil and Throckmorton both know that Robert did not murder Amy, but they're not letting on because this is really good for them. Because Cecil's back. Death of Amy, hey, right. I've reclaimed all my power.
Right.
I don't need to spend my country in their retirement, riding my mule. So by October of the following year, after the inquest is done and completed, Robert returns to court and the queen loves him as much as ever. But he's thinking like, hey, I've paid my dues. Let's get it on. I've been in mourning for a year.
Mm-hmm.
I'm now a widower. There's nothing stopping us.
Right.
Elizabeth has changed her tune. She is imperiled by this scandal. She tells him, like, I know something funny happened, man. Cecil's been talking about it. Throckmorton's been talking. Like, something weird happened, and this accidental death thing isn't flying with me. And I know other things that have not been reported. And Elizabeth, smart, careful, is not going to take that risk and returns back to her childhood vow of, I will never marry.
Right.
And Robert knows, son of a traitor. Shit, now his reputation is done. And, like, he spends every bit of his time wishing it hadn't happened. But think about this. If you're Cecil, it's like Agatha Christie or Gone Girl. The suspicion of you alone is enough to ruin you, mm-hmm. right? It's your family. Of course this is your family lineage. Of course you're a dirty, dirty bastard. All the rivals at court are now studying the inquest. Everybody's trying to find a way to take Robert down, especially now that he's been back at court.
Oh, wait, so is this like the Mueller report? And like yes. all of his enemies are like...
This is it. Yes, okay. That's exactly it.
Interesting. So
here's the deal. If she did have breast cancer, it could have made her bones and spine brittle enough that a fall maybe would have caused a broken neck with limited impact. Maybe she did make a desperate decision to stick it to him and take her own life. But suicide in Tudor times is like, it's...
Oh, yeah.
It doesn't have... It's not unheard of, sure, but it is so against religion that it's understand. A rarity.
Is it possible as well, since she is living in this compound with plenty of other people, that she may have struck up a friendship with a male that turned...
Or Lady Oddingsells, mm-hmm. Lady Companion. But everybody's gone. Okay, so hold... Here's... Okay. And maybe, if she's dying anyway and knows it's coming, maybe she's like, you know what? Fuck off, Robert. I'm going to go ahead and find a way to set my own death up so that you look guilty as fuck.
Right, but how does she get those head wounds?
It's a good question.
Is it owls?
Owls. So, here's my supposition. And, I mean, this is... Why would you need to clear your household? Why do you send everybody away that day? If maybe you're not having an important visitor come to you. I need it to be secret. You've been told, I need to see you. You need to clear the house. It's a secret visit. Who would be important enough for her to clear her house? Robert? Sure. Cecil? Or one of his henchmen? Because he had henchmen. So let me tell you, in something else that's been found. God, I get so excited about this. Okay. Something else that's been found, because Cumnor Palace was a house in very good repair. A few years after this, there is a grid map, like architecture drawing of the home made. And, okay, the fall that she took was 6 stairs.
That's not much.
She went around a corner. And so in this house, because it has been built up over the centuries, the stairwell, if I can it's audio visual podcast. This isn't like 30 straight stairs in a row like Scarlett O'Hara.
Right.
Stairs are built for you to carry things. And if you do take a fall, you're stopping yourself after 6 stairs. There's a landing. Now you turn the corner. There's another 5 stairs and there's a landing. Like, you're never going to fall enough stairs to fucking hurt yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you're Amy Robsart. It's a tiny amount of space. And did we mention... the dents the size of 2 thumbs.
Mm-hmm.
So the case against Robert having anything to do with it, all of his letters at the time, every bit of his correspondence supports his unpreparedness and shock and bewilderment. He is acting exactly the way you would if...
you got news that your wife had suddenly died under weird circumstances.
Yeah. That's exactly right. If he's acting... it's the best act that's ever been put on in history. I don't think he's acting. Like, court scandal and rumor and gossip, but he is not going to be stupid enough to try to end maybe an annulment. Sure. Maybe she's already dying. But no, I'm not going to fucking kill her. He's not going to be stupid enough to do that when he's barely escaped with his life from the tower all those years ago. Like, ending her is the ruin of him. It lays him out for crucifixion. His reputation is beyond repair. Elizabeth will never be his, although he does try to make a few more attempts. Robert will not marry again until 1578 to Lettice Knollys, who is also a cousin of Elizabeth, and that story is pure trashery and scandal, but coming back around for another trashy Tudors. Okay, so my position, totally and completely, although it will never be proved, is that William Cecil did it. He has motive, means, and opportunity. He has the most to lose from Dudley making a rise at court and marrying Elizabeth, and the most to gain if he can set him up for that type of reputation assault and slander. Because he didn't do anything anyway, but I can crucify you just on gossip alone. Like, it is a calculated and cruel plot.
It's what was done to Anne Boleyn.
But calculated and cruel sounds exactly like William Cecil.
Well, it's very much in keeping with the power plays of the time. I mean, again, that is what Cromwell did to Anne Boleyn and her entire faction at court.
That's exactly it. So my money is on Cecil.
Sure.
But you tell me, like, do you know about the case? Do you care about the case? Comment and let me know. I'll ask you, do you think it was an accident, illness, suicide, or murder? What's your...
Well, head wounds that don't have any reason to be there from the fall pattern.
Six stairs.
Well, let's say she did have some underlying... Right, like, a broken neck from six stairs would be unusual, but certainly feasible.
If she's ill, sure.
But no, if you get mysterious head wounds, yeah.
Two thumbs deep.
Into your brain, yeah.
Into your brain? Yeah.
That strikes me as she was struck with something, you know? That
so you look at, like, okay,
maybe a couple of times.
Inquest, it took a year, accidental. And you still have Elizabeth saying, like, I know there's something fucking fishy.
Yeah.
Like, the inquest may have said that it was an accident and it was just misfortune for Amy, but it's enough that I'm done with you.
Sure.
I mean, they still pony boyed up, don't get me wrong. Like, he's still around, but it's at a definite... It is not the love affair that was happening previous, much to Robert's dismay.
Yeah.
Wow. So that is the trashy, maybe murder, not quite yet divorced of Robert Dudley and Amy Robsart. And oh, just to round it out, you know what's a perfect match astrologically?
What?
Cancer and Virgo.
Oh.
Robert and Elizabeth would have made a... incredibly wonderful pair, but there you go. There's your irony. That's my story. I love that story. What do you think? You think there's something fishy to it too, don't you?
I do, yeah. No, the Cecil thing makes perfect, or one of his henchmen, but
I mean,
yeah,
I've
that
written
makes perfect
it
sense.
So that Cecil makes perfect sense, but I mean, Cecil makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
Like, who else? You don't clear the house. You don't command your staff to go away. Your staff is angry about it.
And
you're
I don't think you clear your staff if your husband is going to drop by for a visit.
No, you're going to want everybody to see your husband.
Well, and to pamper him, like to remove his boots and do all the footman stuff that the servants do, to bring wine, to bring food. Like, you, yes.
Okay, so here's another little addendum that. Case to me is against suicide. The one piece, there's not a lot that still exists that Amy Robsart actually wrote, but like a week and a half before her death, she has written a letter to her tailor talking about the kind of dress she wants. Like, yeah, I want it to be like this other dress that I had, but change these things about it.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think the staff says, you know, she's been depressed. We'd been worried about her. And even to the point where...
Well, the queen had stolen her husband, whom she hadn't seen for 14 months.
Exactly.
And she may have been in ill health.
Exactly.
Like...
So there is... Here's a little interesting... Like, I could talk about the story all day. I fucking love it. But her whole staff, her servants, Mrs. Odding's cells, like, everybody's really worried about her. And they end up writing to the queen's physician at Oxford. Like, hey, this is Robert's wife, and we're really worried about her. Can you prescribe something for her to help? And the queen's physician is like, are you fucking out of your mind? I'm not giving you anything. I'm not going to be in the tower for her having a reaction. Just like, no, sorry, not doing that. So like even her staff had tried to intervene medically, and medically the doctor they tried, like maybe they went to another doctor. I don't know. But he's like, fuck no, I'm not giving her any, you're out of your mind. I'm not going to, no. So it's tricky. Like there's a, for every way you can make a case, there's another million things why that couldn't be it. Like it's all, this is one of my favorite mysteries. I think Cecil's a dirty, dirty dog. Because he lives out the rest of his life for Elizabeth, doing her jam, running, like he is a statesman beyond compare, her loyal ally for the rest of his life. Anyway, there's a trashy bonus divorce. Such So tell us what y'all think. Accident, yeah. Murder, illness, suicide? Who done it?
Yeah,
who
done it? I know a lot of you are much more into this than I am. It is a good little mystery story, though.
But now you've heard it.
Yeah.
I don't think that...
No, I've never heard it that completely before.
Well, you sometimes start rolling your eyes and get a little bored. So now that I have you on mic, I have to listen to the whole thing.
I know. I'm your hostage for Tudor history.
I love this. No,
it is. It's a good little mystery.
The manifestation of all my nefarious plans coming true.
It's a good little whodunit, which would include herself in the options for whodunit.
Yeah, there's... I don't know. How many options do you want to take it down?
And the owlry next door.
Oh, shit. Yeah, we definitely was an owl. I don't even know why William Cecil just didn't fly in a flock of owls from Hogwarts.
Probably did.
Yeah. Anyway. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. Let me know. Comment. Let me know if you've listened and what you think about it. Do you think Cecil is a dirty, dirty dog? Or what are your assumptions?
See, I would say it could have been Elizabeth, except she banished him from court and thus ended the relationship.
Elizabeth said the night before, Lady Amy's dead. Remember? She had some kind of precognizance 24 hours before anybody knows that Amy is dead,
Or the Spanish ambassador got the day
fudged
wrong.
Fudged a little on the right. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, we're never going to know.
That gets tricky. Can I also ask, okay, because again, the Spanish ambassador was documenting the last days of Anne Boleyn as well.
Like different Spanish ambassador, but yes.
No, I understand, mm-hmm. But did the English crown treat the Spanish ambassador, that position, whoever was holding it, mm-hmm. differently as a way to funnel information that, I don't know, the French court wouldn't have? Because I feel like that was the big rivalry at the time. That would change, but it is interesting that all of these accounts... I mean, it is as though the government of Spain and the government of England had some sort of...
Spain is Catholic. They want Catholicism back in England. So
okay, now, so they're just watching more closely. Well, so is France, though. France, well...
Yeah. Sure, but hold on. Catherine of Aragon, Spanish princess. So you've got decades and decades of Spanish ambassadors very... Because Chapuis was at the English court for, God, like 3 decades. But everything they're writing, it is to, depending on what time period it is,
like their family,
defend Catherine of Aragon, yeah. Promote Mary's cause to the throne, dissolve Protestantism, excommunicate Henry. Like, Spain is always involved on the side of Spain and the side of God and the side of what they think the Catholic religion is.
So their ambassadors were just sort of more keen observers, or maybe they kept the records better than...
No, they're very, very biased.
Oh, I know, but I'm sure the French ambassador would have been very, very biased as well. And you know what I'm saying?
Oh, yes, like, Spain kept immaculate records.
Okay, that's kind of what I'm asking. Like, why are all of these accounts from the ambassador from Spain?
Because Spain didn't fuck around. They filed everything. They categorized everything. They wrote about what they got. So even if those records were destroyed,
Right.
Yeah. Spain did not dick around with their communications from the English court. Because Spain wants England.
Right.
Like, you've still got England at this time. Like, Elizabeth's going to die in 1603, leaving England once again. Like, the Mary Queen of Scots thing hasn't even fucking happened yet in this story. Like, this is trashy Tudors for life, yo.
All right.
Anyway.
On that note.
Trashy Tudors for life.
Careful.
Death and execution.
Careful what you tell the Spanish ambassador.
Yeah, that's the truth. Keep it trashy.
Because generations henceforth shall know some version of what you said.
Keep it Tudor. Keep it trashy. God, so much fun.
All right, I love this story.
Thanks, everybody, for tuning in.
We will talk soon.
Bye, y'all.
Bye.
And thanks to you for listening. Trashy Divorces is a Hemlock Creatives production, created and produced right here in Atlanta, Georgia, by us, Stacy and Alicia, with a little research and writing help from the brilliant Melissa O.
Our art is by Sydney V. Smith. That's Sydney V. Smith at carbonmade.com. And our music is used with permission of Ratsy. Check her out at Ratsy's store on Instagram. And definitely drop into Ratsy's store anytime you're in Oberlin, Ohio.
You can contact us at trashydivorces@gmail.com. or find us on the World Wide Web at trashydivorces.com.
If you need more trash candy in your life, our Patreon community includes some of the very best humans around and thousands of hours of bonus content at every level of support. Join the fun at patreon.com/trashydivorces.
Interested in some Trashy Divorces swag? Check out our merch shop and Trash Panda Enthusiasm Society at bit.ly/trashygear.
Want to advertise with us? Reach out to sales@advertisecast.com for more information.
And last but not least, come play with us on social media. I keep most of our Trashy Divorces Instagram hopping. Stacy and I share it up over on Facebook, including our Trashy Divorces podcast discussion group. Come join us over there, and thanks again, everybody, for listening.
Keep it trashy, y'all.